TED Audio Collective.
You're listening to TED Talks Daily, where we bring you new ideas to spark your curiosity every day. I'm your host, Elise Hugh. MIT management professor Zeynep Ton has a thought-provoking take on work that really stood out to our TED audience when they heard her for the first time. But don't take it from me. We will let a TEDster introduce this idea.
There's no work that is beneath humans. What's beneath humans is to not be able to have decent pay, not be able to have decent working conditions. And I think rather than thinking about how to eliminate entire categories of jobs that support people's lives and families, we should be thinking about how to make the jobs better. And I felt like it was such a good counterpoint to this fantasy where like a whole universe of working class work is just going to get wiped out.
Zeynep Ton's talk coming up after the break. Support for this show comes from Capital One. Banking with Capital One helps you keep more money in your wallet with no fees or minimums on checking accounts and no overdraft fees. Just ask the Capital One bank guy. It's pretty much all he talks about, in a good way. He'd also tell you that this podcast is his favorite podcast, too. Aw, really? Thanks, Capital One bank guy. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC. Support for the show comes from LinkedIn. LinkedIn ads allow you to build the right relationships, drive results, and reach your customers in a respectful environment. They are not getting barraged. This is very targeted. You will have direct access to and build relationships with a billion members, 180 million senior level executives. Everyone's on a LinkedIn, it seems like, and 10 million C-level executives. You'll be able to drive results with targeting and measurement tools built specifically for B2B. In technology, LinkedIn generated 2 to 5 times higher return on ad spend than other social media platforms. You'll work with a partner who respects the B2B world you operate in. 79% of B2B content makers said LinkedIn produces the best results for paid media. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Go to linkedin.com/TED Audio to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/TED Audio. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be. Support for this podcast comes from the Defender 110. For those who embrace the impossible, the new Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with thoroughly modern design, with an exterior that's reimagined with really compelling proportions and really precise detailing. The interior is built with robust materials, built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary, whether you're off-roading or dealing with harsh weather conditions. And the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8 people. Really great for trips and big families. A vehicle made to go further is the Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
Like TED Talks? You should check out the TED Radio Hour with NPR. Stay tuned after this talk to hear a sneak peek of this week's episode.
And now, our TED Talk of the day.
I am so excited to be here to talk to you about work that is not glamorous, like cleaning bathrooms, shelving tomatoes, picking up trash, or bathing the elderly. During the pandemic, we call the workers who do this work essential because our world literally stops without them. Remember how we used to clap for them? You know, we've been talking a lot about AI robots, but this work is also unlikely to be automated. So these jobs are here to stay. But a lot of people can do this work. So the wages that are set by the market are low. In fact, market pay is often unlivable pay. And tens of millions of essential workers live in a vicious cycle of poverty and lack dignity, which also hurts their companies. Take Janet, a full-time hourly manager at a retail chain. Even as a manager, her low income didn't pay the bills for her and her son. So she had to have a second job. But she couldn't hold on to her second job because her work schedule changed all the time. One day, she might work from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. The next morning, her shift might start at 5 a.m. Just imagine her life and imagine how little time she had with her son. "My life is always in a turmoil," Janet told me. She couldn't sleep. Amazingly, though, she still cared so much about doing a good job at work. But even there, she failed in front of her customers all the time. One day, she said to me, customers were yelling at her because the checkout line was too long. Some walked off, leaving their full baskets. The line was too long because there weren't enough workers at the store. And so many of the workers who were there were new, so they were slow and made a lot of mistakes. They put the wrong product on the wrong shelf or left the expired milk in the fridge. When customers caught mistakes at the checkout, cashiers had to call Janet for help every time because they weren't trusted to adjust prices or even solve the smallest problems. Controls like that drove people crazy and wasted everyone's time. Janet begged for more staff. But her store's poor performance meant even a lower labor budget, which meant more mistakes and higher turnover. So she was always starting from square one, rehiring, retraining, more firefighting. You know, these dynamics are so common in labor-intensive services like retail stores, restaurants, call centers, nursing homes, hotels, that it seems like it's the only way for companies to keep their costs down. But it's not. You know, it's true, Janet's company isn't spending the money on labor, but they are spending the money on rehiring, retraining, on lost sales from long lines, empty shelves, and poor service, on all the wasted products and wasted time. Now, I'm an operations management professor at MIT. We can't stand waste or inefficiency in operations. So that's the reason that I began researching service operations 25 years ago. But then when I met hardworking people like Janet, who weren't making it, their struggles got to my heart, especially as an immigrant who believes in the American dream. So figuring out how to improve company performance and jobs became my work mission. Now, luckily, some companies have already figured this out. So Jim Sinegal, Costco's co-founder and my business hero, visits my class. My MBA students are always so curious. They say, how can Costco, the world's third largest retailer, afford to pay workers so much more than other retailers and provide its customers the lowest prices? And Jim's answer is always the same. He says, paying your fellow workers well isn't altruism. It's good business. Costco's employee turnover is a fraction of the retail average, 8% versus 60%. And its 20-year stock performance is so much higher than other retailers or S&P 500. You might say, yeah, but Costco is an exception. Jim Sinegal is brave and brilliant. And that's the only reason they can keep their costs low and wages high. But it's not just Costco. Others, like Mercadona, Spain's largest supermarket chain. Quick Trip, a convenience store chain with gas stations, have also turned what's typically considered low-wage, high-turnover jobs into good jobs. Now, these companies all pay their workers more because absence of sufficient pay guarantees high employee turnover. But pay alone is not going to make Janet's job a good one. And if all Janet's company did was to pay workers more without raising their productivity, then that would mean either higher prices or lower profits. Higher pay requires higher productivity. And higher productivity requires better work. Here's how work at Janet's store would be different if her store operated more like Costco or Quick Trip or Mercadona. Everyone's priority would be the customer. So when there's a long line at the checkout, someone shelving merchandise would rush over to open a cash register because they would be cross-trained. When there are problems, experienced cashiers would be trusted to solve them quickly. No need to call Janet for help. They would also work fast, not just because they have expertise, but because corporate would do everything it can to simplify their work. Janet's store would also operate with slack, meaning having enough staff to take care of the customer, minimize mistakes, and do improvement. But operating with slack wouldn't work if there are slackers, right? So the standards would be high. And with turnover low, Janet would have time to develop her team and improve performance. Now, if you think about the work at the store, it's still not glamorous. And Janet would still go home physically exhausted, but not defeated. She would feel valued, and she would take pride in creating a lot of value.
And now, back to the episode.
So what makes a job a good one, both for workers and companies, is not this or that thing, but it's the system. It's a system with two interdependent elements. One is investment in people, pay, schedules, career paths, standards. The other is work that's productive and motivating with simplification, empowerment, cross-training, and operating with slack. I want to make this system, which I call the good job system, the norm, not the exception. So to do that, I started a nonprofit called the Good Jobs Institute. And I've been working with my former MBA students, and together, we have now worked with more than 30 companies whose leaders wanted to adopt the system to win with their customers. And we have seen small and large companies in different industries do it. A huge part of their success was their leaders' ability to imagine the workings of their own good job system and have the courage to adopt it. Let me give you an example. In 2017, John Furner became the CEO of Sam's Club, which is Walmart's membership-based model that competes with Costco. Now, at the time, Sam's Club was struggling and way behind Costco in terms of labor productivity, member satisfaction, sales, employee turnover. John was Sam's Club's 14th CEO in 34 years. Imagine the performance pressure, right? To show results in a short amount of time. One of the earliest changes that John wanted to make was to raise pay $5 to $7 an hour from a basis of $15 an hour for workers who cut meat, who worked in bakery, who led teams. But John got pushback. HR said, don't do it. Last time you raised pay, it didn't reduce turnover. Finance said, don't do it. It's not in the budget. There was no way for John to be able to prove with numbers that higher pay and higher pay alone without the rest of the system would pay off. But he was certain that Sam's Club couldn't be a great company if they didn't raise pay. You see, to be loved by their customers, their members, they had to have a motivated, capable team that can set up for success. That wasn't possible without reducing turnover. And reducing turnover wasn't possible without raising pay. Because people were leaving for jobs that paid a couple more dollars an hour. So just like Jim Sinegal, John could connect the dots between pay, turnover, productive work, and competitiveness. So he and his team took a leap of faith, they raised pay, and they did the hard bottom-up work to improve productivity and jobs. When they announced the first pay raises, some employees cried. You know, for workers like Janet, a couple more dollars an hour is the difference between working one or two jobs. It's the difference between getting enough sleep or not. having a stable schedule is the difference between spending time with your son or not. And for Sam's Club, within the first 2 years, labor productivity, measured as units sold per hour, increased 16%. Employee turnover dropped 25% for hourly workers, even more for managers. Sales increased 25% without opening new stores. This type of performance improvement fueled more investment in people and record membership growth. The once struggling chain is now a growth engine for its parent company, Walmart, which too is on a good job journey. And John Furner got promoted to be the CEO of Walmart USA. Now, I'm talking a lot about retail, but it's not just retail. At Good Jobs Institute, we've seen similar results: higher productivity, lower turnover, more love from customers, and higher sales at restaurants, call centers, even at a pest control company. The success of these courageous early adopters, I hope, will make it a lot easier for others to make a bet on their people. You know, when we think about high-performance organizations, our first instinct is often to fix the people, right? But it turns out what really needs fixing is their work and their pay. The problem was never Janet. The problem was the system that Janet was stuck in. And if we see jobs like hers, not as dead-end jobs, but as good jobs, that can provide dignity, respect, and a decent living, we would have more engaged and productive workers. We would have more competitive companies, a stronger economy, and a growing rather than a shrinking middle class. Tens of millions of essential workers would have hope instead of desperation, and that will be a blessing for all of us. Thank you.
That was Zeynep Ton speaking at TED 2024. If you're curious about TED's curation, find out more at TED.com/curation guidelines. And that's it for today. TED Talks Daily is part of the TED Audio Collective. This episode was produced and edited by our team, Martha Estefanos, Oliver Friedman, Brian Green, Autumn Thompson, and Alejandra Salazar. It was mixed by Christopher Fazy Bogan. Additional support from Emma Taubner, Daniela Balarezo, and Will Hennessy. I'm Elise Hugh. I'll be back tomorrow with a fresh idea for your feed. Thanks for listening.
Before they were arrested, Pussy Riot's Nadia Tolokonikva remembers what they sang.
Our last performance before being thrown to jail was Virgin Mary, please become a feminist. Virgin Mary, please get rid of Putin.
Ideas about being a loudmouth. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen to the TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
PRX.